Ask the Doctor is brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare.
A promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program. For its editorial content, statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
So very much for tuning in to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. Today, we are joined by, hands down, my favorite guest on the program, Dr. Wesley Mills. He is with St. Vincent's Primary Care, and we're talking about a whole host of issues today. We're going to talk about primary care for a while. We're also going to talk about sports medicine, sports-related injuries. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Dr. Mills, thank you so much for coming back on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. So we are talking about primary care. And, you know, primary care is one of those things that it seems like young people in particular under the age of 40 really seem to avoid having a primary care physician. And can you kind of explain to me why it's important to be proactive on your health prior to the age of 40?
You know, the thing we need to do is, because it's all about preventative care. And a lot of time when you're younger, you don't really think about some of these things, but you, especially when you feel really well. But you want to make sure that your blood pressure is staying well controlled. There's no issues with your cholesterol. You know, there's no issues with your blood sugars. And some of the things you don't feel. Like, you'll feel completely fine, so you won't know until you go get checked out. Also, along with, you know, just getting a once-a-year exam. And we typically, like I said, we're just not really good about doing that until we start to get older, especially right. Men. Yeah. Women are much better, but men especially.
Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, until we can't walk, we tend to not go to the doctor. But, you know, speaking upon that, Dr. Mills, how has the continuity of care improved by having a primary care physician?
Well, it's huge, because what happens is, you know, there's a lot of great specialists, but if you go see some, you know, a specialist about your knee and they just notice your blood pressure being high, they're really not equipped to handle that. I mean, they're there for, you know, they're you know, a highly tuned specialist for that particular thing, so they're not going to really want to handle other issues you have. So you want somebody who's kind of like your quarterback, who can see everything that's going on, kind of handle, you know, what, because the primary care specialists are, they're equipped to handle lots of different things, but they'll also know when you need to go see a specialist. So if you only go see your specialist, there may be a lot of things they're missing, because, for example, Tim, like you said, if you go see someone about your knee or your shoulder, they're going to be great with handling that. But they're not going to be so great about, you know, taking labs on you, and because that's not what they do. So you want to make sure you have a primary care specialist who can help you kind of just navigate through things when you come, when you have issues, or just find out things that you may not even know you have.
So, and again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. I want to kick this over a little bit to you, Dr. Mills, before we really get into the meat of the episode. Can you tell me a little bit about your practice, specifically where the phone number and that kind of thing, but also what made you want to do this type of care as a line of work?
Well, my office is over off of the Gate Parkway near St. Vincent's, south side of St. Luke's Hospital. And it's a, I do primary care and sports medicine, which basically means I do, you know, with primary care, I see patients from, you know, 5 up until 105. So, but then also with my sports medicine, I do like a lot of non-operative orthopedics. So I'm also like the team doctor on the sideline of football games and basketball games. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff. So the practice is, you know, very diverse. So all ages are welcome, basically, after age of 5, because I try not to do a lot of immunizations under the I feel bad for the kiddos at 2 and 3 getting all the immunizations. So
I mean, that's a topic for another show, I suppose.
Right, right. So 5 and up, though, yeah, it's when I see the kiddos. And basically, you know, I just love sports, and I loved primary care as well. So it was a great combination for me to be able to do both by doing this.
And so if you want to reach Dr. Mills at his office, if you aren't able to get through to the show for some reason, the phone number for Dr. Mills' office is 904-400-6500. Again, that is 904-400-6500. You know, so we are going into the fall, and I think the last time you were on, it was right at the beginning of summer. So we were spending a lot of time talking about sunburns and that kind of thing. But as far as fall goes, what are you guys really seeing a lot of this time of year?
You know, this is the time of the year where, especially as it starts to cool down, you start seeing things. We're already seeing issues with, like, you know, people have seasonal allergies, you know, asthma. But you also start to see some of the viruses come up, some of the issues with sore throat. So you may see some strep. You may see ear infections, bronchitis. So those things start to pop up, especially as it starts to cool down.
As far as strep goes, I've had strep, I think, 4 times since moving to Florida. It's got to be an allergy thing. But can you kind of speak to the difference how somebody knows as soon as possible that it's strep and it's not just a sore throat?
You know, sometimes it's very difficult to tell. And that's why we'll check some of the rapid strep tests, because it's a lot of times people have what we call just acute pharyngitis. It's an acute inflammation of the throat. And there's a lot of time it's hard to tell whether it's a virus or bacterial, and that's why we'll do these strep tests. But if you consistently are running like a high fever, maybe if you break out in a rash, those are times when you might start to think, maybe I need to go see my doctor and have it checked just to make sure I don't have strep, which is very easily treatable.
And so, I was reading online at jackshealth.org that a primary care physician can lower your overall medical costs.
Yeah, it's true, because again, what you want to do, it's all about primary prevention, because if we can get something very early, you can prevent it from happening. Mm-hmm. So for example, Tim, you come to me and your cholesterol is high, and we talk about diet, exercise, and perhaps I put you on a medication, whatever the case may be, but we get your cholesterol down. What can happen is that could prevent you from later on having a heart attack or stroke later on, which obviously decreases, the cost expenditures, not just from you, but from the insurance company and the nation as a whole. So by preventing things, on the primary end, you really can just save a lot of money later on. And that's kind of the key to all this stuff. And that's why we're so, we try to stress the importance of, annual visits, getting labs done, because a lot of these things, they truly are silent killers, because you don't always know if your blood pressure is elevated unless you get your blood pressure checked a lot, which we typically don't. You don't know if your cholesterol is elevated because you don't feel anything unless you get your cholesterol checked. Same thing with your blood sugars and screening for diabetes. Unless it gets really, really high, typically you won't have any symptoms. So a lot of these things are preventable and easily treatable, but you have to know you have them.
So I think that's been one of the overall conversations about reducing the cost of medical costs really throughout the entire country has been the lack of preventative care that as a nation we're really undergoing. We seem to be so reactionary to our health instead of preventative to the health.
Exactly. That's definitely true.
And so let's go ahead and take a phone call right now. We have Owen over on the north side of town. You are live on Ask the Doctor. What's on your mind, Owen?
Yes, sir. What are some of the best home treatments for either a canker sore or a tongue ulcer? Very, very small, but they feel like you got a freight train in your mouth, and they may reoccur about every 3 weeks, go away finally, and didn't know if some primary medications that you might be taking for diabetes, metformin, for example, would that be causing them to show up?
Oh, and typically they're not. The medications shouldn't be causing them. And some people swear by some of the some of the amino acids, like lysine, can help. But really, my best guess would be tell you to. Not always with the canker sores, but if you went to see your doctor and they figured out that it was like fever blisters, which some can occur inside your mouth, sometimes some things that really help with that are like some of the antiviral medications, like the Valtrex and those type of medications. But we don't, as far as home remedies, not a whole bunch for that, because typically it's a viral thing and they will heal on their own. But like you said, they definitely can come back.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about the benefits of yogurt?
Not so much with canker sores.
But is a canker sore and a tongue ulcer totally different, or are they about the same?
They're about the same. They're what we call aphthous ulcers. And like I said, you kind of have to determine, and it's hard for you guys to necessarily know, but that's why I say sometimes if they keep recurring, you might want to see your primary care doctor or even see, your dentist. But a lot of times those aphthous ulcers are viral in nature, and they sometimes happen when people get sick. But they can recur. And with viruses, sometimes we don't have a lot of treatment for them because, again, this one's not a bacterial infection, so antibiotics don't always help and those kind of things.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate that phone call. And again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. Dr. Mills here in the studio with me from St. Vincent's Healthcare, sports medicine doctor, primary care. I want to kick this over a little bit into talking about sports medicine. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were asking me, and they said specifically as a runner, what steps should I be taking to ensure the health of my feet and ankles before a big run?
You know, the key with everything is, and it kind of depends on how far, you're going to run. But the key is making sure that you're training properly prior to the run, because that's going to help. Make sure you're wearing proper shoes, and you just, that you change your shoes often enough, because that's another thing we run into. You get a really good, comfortable pair of shoes. You wear them, you know, along, and you put a lot of miles on them. And after you have so many, after there's so many miles on them, it can start to cause, they start to break down, which can then start to cause you a lot of problems with your feet and ankles. So you got to make sure you're changing your shoes often enough. And also that you have the proper shoes, that you're wearing the proper shoes, because everyone has different foot types. And so you want to make sure that, you know, and if you do a lot of running, maybe a good idea to go to one of the, you know, not just like a Foot Locker or, you know, but one of the, you know, running stores, so they can actually do an analysis of, you know, how you run and the best type of shoes for you, because that can definitely help. Then you get into nutrition, you know, eating right, getting enough rest, proper stretching. But a lot of these things can help you prevent injuries. And then there's also overuse. So you got to make sure that you're getting proper rest. So if you're, you know, especially if you're training for a marathon, obviously you're doing a lot of running. You're putting quite a lot of miles on, but you have to make sure that you're not overtraining, because overtraining and overuse can also lead to injuries. So it's just a delicate balance.
I want to get into stretching a bit, because being somebody that plays basketball as a side hobby, if you will, definitely not professionally, it seems like a lot of us on the basketball court aren't stretching like maybe we possibly should. But you were talking about overuse, and it seems like is the overuse of the foot, among other things, it causes stress fractures and for a lot of athletes. And, you know, what are some ways they can avoid those?
You know, because you really see a lot of stress fractures, especially in people who are running long distances, because that's when you really see them. A lot of cross-country athletes, or just, you know, if you're training for a half or a full marathon. And part of the reason is because we're training on really, really hard surfaces, because most of us aren't running on, you know, soft, bouncy tracks like at UNF or right. nature trails. We're running on, you know, concrete, asphalt, and those cause a lot of high impact. And so after you're running for a long period of time on those surfaces, you can develop small microfractures, which can then develop into stress fractures. And so some of the main things, again, are, you know, proper stretching, proper nutrition, you know, the proper footwear. You may need, if they start to bother you, you may need to get some, like, you know, some either custom or even over-the-counter inserts, like the Dr. Scholl's can sometimes help for shock absorption type issues. But the main thing, like you said, is you kind of have to pay attention to your body, because when you start to have a lot of problems, you probably need to back off, because it's not always just, you know, training through the pain, because sometimes you can cause yourself more injuries by doing that. So when you get, when you have like a nagging injury, especially like in your shins, because that's a lot of time where we get some of the stress fractures along with in the
shin
feet.
Splints and exactly. things. I mean, real painful.
What happens is you get like a little bone reaction. So the shin splints can then later on become stress fractures. So you have to be careful, because you know, what starts off as like a little irritation, inflammation, can then become a fracture later on. So you have to be careful. So you really have to pay attention to your body.
No, so I know a lot of people that have problems with shin splints, that they get those, I don't know the specific name for it, but these things that you put over your legs that are really tight, and they wear those when they're doing their sport. Is that a good way to avoid shin splints?
I mean, they can help, but the key again is, you know, stretching, proper nutrition, don't overtrain, and the key really, like I tell you, listen to your body.
Right, absolutely. Listen to your body. That's probably some personal advice I could take in that field. But Sol, I see you waiting in the line right there. As soon as we get back from this break, Dr. Mills is going to go ahead and take your question. You are listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Stay with us. Listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare each and every single Saturday at 2 o'clock. It is a free hour of medical advice, and the show is all about you. Join in, be part of the conversation. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Today, we have Dr. Mills as a guest, a long-standing friend of the show. And let's go ahead and take this straight over to the phone lines. Sol Oliver in St. John's, you are live on Ask the Doctor. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if Dr. Mills can explain the difference between a family doctor, I guess a general practitioner, versus a family doctor with an internal medicine designation?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So when you look at primary care physicians, you'll have doctors who went through family medicine residency training, and you'll have others who went through internal medicine residency training. The main difference are the family doctors typically see kids, and the internal medicine physicians typically do not. Also, a lot of internal medicine programs, the doctors aren't trained to do like gyne or deliver babies, and the family doctors are. So mostly the internal medicine doctors are for purely adult medicine. Now, that didn't mean some of the internal medicine physicians don't, you know, do women's health. But as a training, typically that's for the family medicine physicians as well with the kids. So basically when you add kids and female health, that's mostly the family doctors. And the internal medicine is pretty much just all adult doctors. So the family medicine adds in the, you know, seeing kids or pediatrics, as well as some of the gyne and OB. So they may do some deliveries, and some of them do C-sections. So that's the primary difference.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for that phone call, Sol. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Mr. Branson, it's been a few weeks since I had a chance to talk to you. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thank you. I've been kind of ill myself. Okay, I've got the phone down. Thank you, Tim. I've been in broadcasting. What I wanted to ask Tim, the doctor, was about blood tests. How important are blood tests with the primary that goes to the specialist? And also tell me about two questions about sport medicine, about the adhesive capsulitis. I had that from a workers' comp injury. What's involved there? And tell me about how important are blood tests that you have, that you've sent to the specialist. Please, thank you, Tim, and thank you, the doctor.
Very welcome. So, you know, there's different blood tests we do, and some of them we send to the specialist because it depends on what specialist you're seeing. But just in general, depending on your age, kind of determines which blood tests we should be getting. But I'll tell you, pretty much for everyone, you know, we need to screen for diabetes, so fasting blood sugars, check your liver function to look at, you know, liver tests, kidney function, your electrolytes. We like to check your cholesterol. We like to check your thyroid function. If you have a history of anemia, of course, we would check for that, iron levels. If you're a male over 40, I like to check the PSA or prostate test. And that, even though sometimes, you know, sometimes people, you know, different organizations say whether we should get them or not. I like to check for the PSAs on my males over 40. And depending on what specialist you see, we all like to share information so there's not a lot of duplication, but we can keep everyone informed of, you know, what our findings are. So if I see you, Mr. Branson, and your cholesterol is elevated and I send you to see a cardiologist, I'd like to send him that same information so he knows, you know, how your cholesterol looks, so he doesn't have to repeat the same test that we've just done.
Hey, Branson, thank you so much for that phone call, man. And seriously, I do hope that you start to get feeling better soon. Please call again next week, man. It's always really nice to talk to you. You are listening to Ask the Doctor. Coming up next after the segment, we have a really interesting phone call by Mildred. We're going to take talking about a doctor wants her to try stem cells. We'll get to that as soon as we get back. You are listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Dr. Mills in the studio. Stay with us. It is 2:36 in the afternoon, and you are listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. We have Dr. Mills here in the studio with us. The show is brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. Dr. Wesley Mills is with St. Vincent's Primary Care. And if you ever want to go ahead and go to his website, you can do so. That is www.millspcsm.com. My name's Tim Tompkins. The show is produced by Ty Ingram. The show's all about you. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Today we're talking about primary care, preventative care, and sports medicine. And let's go ahead and go straight to the phone lines. Mildred over in St. Augustine, thank you so much for calling in today.
Well, you're welcome.
So what can we do for you?
Well, my question is going to be about stem cell replacement. I am an 80-year-old woman, having had dealt with a hip problem for over a year now, and nothing seems to help. They did an MRI, and it was discovered that I had no fluid, anything in my hip joint at all. So my primary doctor is in some type of research program and is now doing stem cell replacement, taking fat from my body and blood, and I don't know what they do, but somehow coming up with my stem cell and reinjecting it into my body. But I cannot get an answer. You know, I'm saying, how long is this going to take? And kind of the go around, like they really don't know, but we're going to test you and find out. So I would like to know what the doctor thinks about it.
Well, you know, I think it's basically an emerging science. So, Mildred, I don't think that they are trying to, you know, put you off. I'm just not sure. We don't know tons about it yet. We know it works and that it can work, but I don't think we've dealt with it long enough to be able to tell you specifics on it. And basically what they're doing is they're just trying to regenerate some of your own cells. And
this,
yeah, and that's the best way to do it. You know, because it's so new, and that's part of the reason why insurance companies aren't paying for it right now. So
well, this would be free to me.
Oh, well, that's really good because it's a research study. So that's excellent. So, I mean, if you're out of options, this is definitely a good option.
I am out of options except for going in for surgery.
Right. So if that's the case, there's not a lot of downside to this, especially if it's going to be free for you. You try it and see how you respond. You may do great, and that may prevent you from even needing a hip replacement.
Right. Well, that's what I thought. But every place I've looked online, they said it, you know, there's no telling what your stem cells will do. They do what you want them to do. And then again, and they do something else that you don't want. That was my big concern.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We don't have, again, it's an emerging thing. So we're not
right.
Really, it's an emerging science. And so, you know, there have been studies done, but it's not, you know, it's fairly new still. So.
And you would do it for your patients?
I mean, I've thought about doing PRP and stem cell and all those things. So it's definitely something I've been thinking about myself. So, like I said, it's just another alternative before you have to get like a hip or a joint replacement.
I understand. Okay. Thank you very much for your input.
You're welcome.
Have a nice day.
Hey, bye. Thanks so much, Mildred. Appreciate the phone call. And again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Dr. Mills here in the studio with us. And the show is brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. We're talking a bit about primary care as well as a bit about sports medicine. I want to take it over to sports medicine a little bit. But again, phone lines are open. Dr. Mills can answer pretty much any question you have related to those topics. So feel free to call in. You know, an injury that's really common among basketball players, football players, among other things, is jammed fingers.
Right.
Sometimes it's not actually a jammed finger, and it's a broken finger or a fractured finger. Are there ways that somebody can tell the difference between the two?
You know, sometimes it's very hard. And that's why, you know, as physicians, we'll need to get x-rays just to make sure, because sometimes it's difficult to tell the difference, because I used to play a lot of basketball. I used to jam my finger all the time. I was lucky enough not to have broken one, but there were times when I thought I may have broken my finger as well.
Because it hurts.
It does. And they swell up for a long time. And so you have decreased range of motion and pain and discomfort. You know, if it's going on for more than a couple of weeks, you probably need to make sure that it's not broken, because the problem is if you let them stay around too long, if you wait too long, 4 to 6 weeks, it'll start to heal, even if it's going to heal improperly. And that's what you don't want, because if it heals improperly, that can severely limit your range of motion going forward, unless you were to go back in and to have surgery and for them to repair that, maybe re-break it and set it, and, you know, place it in the proper alignment. So you don't want to wait too long. Again, if you jam it really, you know, if you play a lot of basketball or football or any kind of sport, you definitely can jam fingers, and you know that. But if it's been a week or two, definitely a couple of weeks, and it's not getting better, it seems like it's getting worse, you're having a lot more pain, the swelling's not getting better, there's a lot of bruising, you might want to get it checked out just to make sure, have an x-ray just to make sure there's not a fracture. And you definitely want to make sure there's no fracture at the joint itself. Because that's a major issue. Because it's one thing to have the bone broken, but it's another issue to have it broken at the joint. Because at the joint's where it's going to limit your range of motion, and that could be something that's permanent if you don't get it fixed.
Oh, well, good to know. I want to talk about a little bit about sharp pain in the legs that people have. They seem to think that a lot of it's leg pain, but sometimes it's actually caused by the back.
Definitely. So what happens is a lot of times you'll have pain, numbness, tingling that shoots down the legs. It could be one or both. And it's what it comes from. It can be from a herniated or bulging disc or anything that can cause to put pressure on the nerve root as it comes out of that part of the spine. And that's what we call, especially if we're talking about low back, because typically it's low back when this happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can happen in your neck as well. But what we call lumbar radiculopathy, which is basically a big long word that's talking about your lumbar spine, your low back. And the radiculopathy just basically just talks about, you know, the nerve irritation or pathology that happens when something is pressed on the nerve root. And I tell my patients, it's kind of like having a faulty electric cord on your bulb. So you have a lamp, and it's not working well because there's a faulty wire and the bulb kind of flashes on and off. Well, what happens with your, you know, with our bodies, the nerve roots go to innervate our muscles. And so what happens is when those, when it's not working properly, instead of getting a proper stream of, you know, nerve innervation, it kind of flicks on and off. And that's when you get pain, numbness, and tingling. So a lot of times, if you're having a lot of pain that you can't, you, it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially if it's going down from like, you know, your hip all the way down to your feet or certain parts of your body. Definitely have them go take a look, because sometimes people don't even have low back pain when this is happening. They'll just have the pain with their, you know, the symptoms with their lower extremities. So, but definitely check that out, because a lot of times you'll need to get, you know, MRI, nerve conduction studies, some other studies just to make sure there's not a bulging herniated disc or there's nothing, there's not something pressing on that nerve root.
And so I'm glad, Dr. Mills, that you brought up hernias, especially speaking of sports hernias. It seems like they are so common. Can you talk to me a little bit about what a sports hernia is and how people can really avoid that?
You know, avoiding is difficult because they just kind of happen. And some people are more prone to get hernias than others. Some of the sports hernias or inguinal hernias.
Well, I guess first off, what exactly is a hernia?
So a hernia is basically any time, and it can be in different places. So people get hiatal hernias, which is basically in the throat or in the GI tract. You can get inguinal hernias, which is in the groin areas. You can get umbilical hernias, which is where your belly button is. So they're in different places, but basically all it is, it's an outpouching. So there's a weakening of the abdominal musculature. And I try to basically give analogies for everything. So when I'm talking to patients, so it makes a little bit more sense. But if you think about a tire and an inner tube, and if your tire is, the outside part of the tire is getting worn down and the inner tube starts to press through, that's kind of what a hernia is. So if on your stomach, say you've had surgery, or if you, even if you haven't had surgery, but if the abdominal musculature starts to get thin or gets weakened, some of the like the intestines and other things underneath it can start to push through, and that's what a hernia is. And it can be painful, and you may notice a lot of times with, you know, heavy lifting. So it depends on what the hernia is, what symptoms you may have. But they can become problematic, because what happens is if they're too tight, they can start to put it like a stranglehold on like the on your intestines, and that can cause major issues, because if it's tightening on the intestines too much, they get decreased blood flow, and that can actually kill that part of the intestines. So it can be dangerous as well. So
I've even heard of some singers, I think Michael Sight from R.E.M., which the cue music to the show is R.E.M., that he got a stomach hernia from singing too hard.
Yeah, exactly. Because what happens is the way you can tell, and that's why I'm saying, is when people do a maneuver, what we call the Valsalva. So you do it, it increases the pressure. So if you're doing a lot of straining from screaming, you know, so the heavy lifting, those kind of things can increase that, you know, the pressure in the abdomen. And that's what can, you know, can predispose you from having those issues.
Okay. So we have about 5 minutes left in this segment. Again, phone lines are open 904-340-1045. Let's do a little bit of rapid fire. I want to see if I can get through a few of these questions. I wasn't able to do them all the last time you were on the show. So it's a good opportunity. How do I treat a pulled hamstring?
You know, the most of the time it's going to be rest initially. So you're going to have to rest it a while, because hamstrings are tricky. And then sometimes it's hard to tell whether you just pulled it or if it's a partial tear. You can typically tell if a full tear, you can have some major issues. But if a partial thickness tear, maybe a little bit more difficult to tell between that and, you know, just if you've just pulled it. But you have to rest it. You have to make sure you're doing a lot of stretching, because again, once you do that, it can be a nightmare to get it back to normal. So you got to do a lot of stretching, and then kind of ease your way back into training. So whatever you're doing, if you're playing basketball, you don't just want to go back and start playing, you know, full court right away. You kind of want to train, you know, get back into, you know, some sport specific maneuvers, maybe some light jogging, especially, and if it's from running, like if you're a sprinter or if you just run long distances, you want to start doing, like, you know, again, shorter runs, just mild jogging, light jogging, and then kind of increase your speed and those kind of things. So whatever it is you're getting back to, you want to kind of slowly, you know, get back to that. And along with doing some rehab on it, because sometimes you might need to get some, you know, physical therapy as well.
And that is one thing that seeing a primary care doctor that they could, you guys can refer people over to the correct places that do the correct type of that, right?
Oh, most definitely.
Next question. How does someone know if their concussion has healed properly?
Okay, so concussions are very tricky, you guys. So concussions are basically traumatic brain injuries. And typically from, it's when you get some kind of trauma to the brain, to the head. Happens a lot. We always think about football, but it can happen it can happen anything. You can fall off a ladder at home and you can get a concussion. It can happen during soccer, but what we do is, and I deal with this a lot with our athletes, you have to make sure that you're free of any symptoms. And some of the symptoms that can happen after concussion, you can get light sensitivity. You may have issues with your memory, either remembering what happened beforehand or remembering or issues afterwards. So what we call anterior or retrograde amnesia, nausea, vomiting, major headaches, trouble sleeping, irritability, mood changes. So all these things basically have to be, you have to be symptom free. And that's when you know the concussion is typically gone. And that's when you can start to kind of go back into. So if it's an athlete, you need to be completely symptom free before we even let you start to go back to any activity. Mm-hmm. So say I have a football player who has a concussion. We take him out of the sport, no activity at all until you're symptom free. Once you're symptom free, you can start doing, sport specific activities like jogging, no hitting for a while until, so each step you have to remain symptom free until, and then you can move on to the next one. And then at which point after a while, then you can get back to full activity once you've met all the requirements for the other steps and, successfully gone through without having any symptoms. But you have to worry because once you have one concussion, especially with the kids, if you get another concussion before the other one's healed, it can be, very dangerous and actually can be, fatal. It's what we call second impact syndrome. Just doesn't happen as much with adults and it's not really an adult thing. But with the kids, we have to be very careful with that. So, but any person who's had multiple concussions can have major issues. So you have to be very careful with these concussions. It's truly a serious situation.
Unfortunately, I shouldn't say unfortunately. Very happy to take phone calls. And Joanne, you are live on Ask the Doctor. We're going to have to get your question in and then answer it on the next question. But if you're live on the air.
Okay, yes, I would like to know, I had a primary care in an Arlington section, and they never gave my test results that I gotten from another entity, and they gave it to a phone representative, and I was wondering if that was supposed to be, was that properly done from the doctor?
Okay, well, if you can hold on real quick, we're going to head and go to a break right now. When we come back, Dr. Mills will answer your question as well as Mike. I see you on the line right there, and we'll get to you as soon as we get back. You are listening to Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. Sticking with us for this last and final segment of Ask the Doctor for this afternoon. We will be back again next Saturday at 2 o'clock. Let's kick it right over to the phone lines. We have Mike over in Oakley. Thanks so much for calling in.
Good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
I wanted the doctor to talk a little bit about homocysteines and how it affects the arteries and it's how it's tested for in elevated levels and what you can do to lower homocysteine levels in conjunction with how that ties in with the overall levels of cholesterol.
Well, they're kind of separate. We do know elevated homocysteine levels can lead to increased heart attacks and strokes. The problem is we're not sure if always lowering it decreases your risk of heart attacks and strokes. So we know the elevated levels definitely can cause problems. We're just not sure if lowering the levels are end up being as helpful as we thought they might, as they once were. So what you can do is the key with – so they're a little bit different than cholesterol. So homocysteine is an amino acid, and which are like basically the building blocks of proteins for our bodies. So what we do is we measure the homocysteine level in your blood. So it's a blood test we check. And we think that by doing that, so when you have elevated levels, we think it's associated with, clogging of the arteries and blood clots. So the main thing is we try to lower the homocysteine levels. But like I said, like we're not sure if by lowering them a whole bunch, if we're making a big difference in decreasing your risk of having a heart attack or stroke. But we do know if your homocysteine levels are elevated, that it definitely is a risk factor for having a heart attack, stroke, and possibly a blood clot, if that helps any.
are the homocysteine levels tested in a normal CBC panel?
No, this is a very specific test that they'd have to check your homocysteine level.
So it would be a specific test ordered by the doctor?
Yeah, they'd have to just, you know, specifically put in that we're checking Mike's homocysteine level, because otherwise other panels don't really have that. So it's a specific test that they would have to check for.
I understand. What are some of the treatments that are used for reduction of homocysteine levels?
You know, sometimes we're using things, so sometimes we're using different medications like Plavix, excuse me. But the problem is with those, it's not necessarily decrease the homocysteine levels, but it's decreased the risk for the heart attacks and strokes. We think some of the statins, some of the cholesterol medications may also help with some of this as well. But again, the jury's out still with, you know, if decreasing the homocysteine level really does a lot of good at this point, because we're not really sure. But we definitely know, though, elevated levels cause problems. So, you know, it would just seem to make sense that lowering your level would help, but we're just not sure yet.
So would it be a test that would be helpful in conjunction with cholesterol testing?
Well, if you're having problems with it, it could be, but it's mostly going to be in problems if you're having problems with if they think something's going on with your cardiovascular health. So it's definitely a test that they could add on. But if they're worried about, you know, especially if you've been having chest pain or they're worried about, you know, any kind of blockages, it's definitely something they probably would check.
Recently, I had a thoracic CT.
Hey, Mike, I apologize. That cue music means we got to go. But thank you so
Not
much for calling in, man. We appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Mills, and especially appreciate your time. Also, I just want to say, if you do want to contact Dr. Mills, you can do so. You can call his office at 904-400-6500. Again, that's 904-400-6500. You can also visit him online at millspcsm.com. That's millspcsm.com. Dr. Mills, you're welcome back anytime, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We have a look at your news, weather, and traffic, kind of wrapping up what's going on I-10 eastbound as you make your way into downtown. Coming up next with Brian Middleton, this is Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare.